How do you like your coffee? Freshly roasted? You can just smell it, can't you? Well, how would you like it brought to you? If you're passionate about your coffee, then a Passion for the Bean is for you. At a Passion for the Bean, they custom roast coffee beans from around the world when you place your order, so your coffee is guaranteed to be fresh, rich, full-bodied, and full of flavor. That's not the taste that you get from coffee beans that have been sitting on a supermarket or coffeehouse shelf for weeks. Now, to have the ultimate coffee experience delivered to your home or office, call a Passion for the Bean at 480-703-2326. That's 480-703-BEAN. A Passion for the Bean has joined forces with the American Stroke Association in the fight to end stroke. Now, you can help by purchasing an ASA signature blend, and 30% of the proceeds will go directly to the ASA. Help us put an end to stroke. The life you save may be your own. And call a Passion for the Bean today, 480-703-2326.
From the studios of KXAM, welcome to Tell the Truth Faster, hosted by Stuart Altshuler, marriage and family therapist. Stay tuned and learn how you can open your mind and soul to new possibilities in life. Now here's your host, Stuart Altshuler.
Welcome to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler. I'm a licensed psychotherapist, and this is a show where every week we deal with mental health issues from a holistic perspective, which means finding balance in body, mind, and spirit in terms of our consciousness. And we all know that the truth will set you free. But the question we ask on this show is, how long are you willing to keep freedom on hold? Now, before I even get into tonight's show, I had a call last week, and her name was Martha, and I really wanted to thank her for taking the time to call in. And if you're a regular listener to the show, you know that people don't have the courage to call in very often. I think part of that is because I speak about issues that really touch very close to home for a lot of people. And I know because I get some emails from people saying, I didn't call in, but, and I really got a lot out of that, and they relate it to their personal issues in terms of what the topic was that week. What I'm doing right now is reminding you that this is a live show this week. It's a call-in show. If you have questions about what we're discussing, or you relate to it in some personal way, or you have disagreements with what I'm saying, know that I am here to listen. We're here to discuss what's going on for you and help you maybe get a lot deeper into the healing of whatever the issue is you're calling about. So, first of all, if you're so inclined to make a phone call and you're afraid to, then the healing is in moving past your fear and picking up the phone. You don't have to give your real name. You don't have to give out any information, although I would love it if you gave my engineer a way of contacting you back. Sometimes over the years, I've actually followed up with people about some issues that they were talking about on the show. But you don't have to do that. But the number to call in tonight is 480-949-1310. That's like KXAM 1310. 480-949-1310 in the Phoenix area. It's the same number if you're listening via the internet and you're outside the Phoenix area. It's 480-949-1310. Now, the other thing I'm going to ask you, and Martha, if you're listening again this week, because you said last week, I was very glad to hear it, that you actually do listen to the show on a somewhat regular basis. I'd love for you to go to my website and email me if you feel so inclined and are willing to, because I can pass on to you a little bit more information about Helen Hill and the transsexual issues, and I can let you know when she's going to be on again, because she will be on again in a few weeks to talk about. We never got to the treatment issues around dealing with being a transsexual. So that will happen within the next couple of weeks, and I'd love to make sure that you know when she's going to be on again. So, Martha, if you're listening, Just go to tellthetruthfaster.com, click on contact, and you'll get that email right to me. And that's true for anybody listening who has some comments, questions, complaints, anything that about what's going on. So with all that being said, this show is about change. Therapy is about change. Nobody goes into therapy consciously and says, I'm going to go spend money and I'm going to go every week and I'm going to do my damnedest not to change. People get into therapy usually because, or most of the time, well, usually because they want to change. Sometimes people are forced, but I believe on a subconscious level they wouldn't be cooperating if there wasn't an innate desire to change, which means something in their life isn't working and they want it to be different. They may or may not believe it can be. But my job as a therapist is to help people open their consciousness to the possibilities, that all possibilities exist, that change is possible, and actually, there's the old saying, change is inevitable. Nothing stays the same. What we get down to then is, if change is inevitable, if things are changing consciously, constantly, would you rather the changes occur consciously, with your input consciously, or would you rather those changes occur with you feeling, continuing to feel in your life you're such a victim of external circumstances and you have no control over anything and you feel helpless and hopeless all the time? And I know a lot of you out there listening right now can really relate to that kind of conscious thinking. So what I'm doing on the show, what I do as a therapist, what I strive to do in my own personal life, and what tonight's particular topic is, it's about change. Now, there's a quote from Margaret Mead that many of you may have heard, and if not, it's a good one to keep in mind. Margaret Mead, the anthropologist, years ago said, "Never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it is the only thing that ever has." End quote. Now remember that that small group of committed citizens starts out with a single committed, thoughtful citizen. That individual committed, thoughtful citizen could be you. And when you get to a conscious place of saying, I want to change something, many of you may have become aware of when you start putting out those thoughts, when you start having an idea, you start attracting other people that have similar ideas or like yours, and it becomes that group of thoughtful, committed citizens. Now, we all know, again, that could be for the better, that could be for the worse, because sometimes an individual has a very destructive thought and finds people to come together to support that, and hence we have terrorist groups and other situations like that. So, but tonight we're talking about positive change. The name of tonight's show is also the name of a book I'm going to be talking about with its author. The name of the show and the book is Yes, You Can Change the World. Again, Yes, You Can Change the World. The subtitle is An Amazing Way to Change Your World and at the Same Time Change the World. The whole week I have been, since I've read this book and I've been thinking about tonight's show, I had this song going through my head, and unfortunately it was only like 20 minutes ago that I realized where it came from, and it was the lyrics, we can change the world, we can change the world, and I realized only about 20 minutes ago that it was a Crosby, Stills, and Nash song, and I know I'm dating myself, but I go back to the 60s and 70s, and we were singing about this, and people are always singing about making changes and the changes that are necessary. So my guest tonight wrote this book called Yes, You Can Change the World. His name is Aman Matwan, and he is an author, a lecturer, a teacher, and I'm actually going to let him fill you in on more of what he has done. He's written a number of books. And the beauty of this book, if I might say so, Aman, before I actually get you on the air, is there are a number of books that come out every once in a while. Some of you may recall a book called, I think it was called Who Moved My Cheese? and there's another book called Love is Letting Go of Fear. These are books that are simple to read and profound in their message and make the message easily accessible. And that is the beauty of Yes, You Can Change the World. So with that being said, I want to introduce to you the author of this book and a very conscious individual, and I know that only through emails and from reading this book. Aman, welcome to the show.
Hello, Stuart. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm very good. It's great to be on your show, and it was great to listen to everything you had to say.
Well, thank you. And thank you for taking time on your Friday night to do this. I'm also a student of a thing called The Course in Miracles, and a lot of my listeners may be aware of that. And I know that A Course in Miracles defines a miracle as a shift in perception.
Yeah.
And, again, your book basically is talking about perceptions and changing perceptions. What's a perception? What's the importance of how perceptions affect our lives and how changing them can improve or not improve our lives?
It's really a very simple thing, and that is how we see the world, how we see ourselves, how we see the people around us, how we see the events in our life. All of that shapes how we think. And that in turn shapes how we act. And that in turn shapes who we are. And that in turn shapes our world. So everything starts with our perspective and how we see everything around us.
Mm-hmm. Well, where do we get those perspectives or perceptions? Where do they come from? How do we create them to begin
with?
Well,
most of us, we gain our perspectives from the people who have raised us. You know, our parents, mm-hmm. our teachers, our leaders, our mentors, our spiritual leaders, all those people shape our perspectives. What we don't realize is that oftentimes they're the blind leading the blind. So they're limiting our perspectives because they themselves have been taught by their leaders and their parents and their teachers to have a very limited perspective or to have a very linear, one way of looking at things. And so what we need to do is to learn to open up our perspectives so that we see things at their essence. We see people at their essence. We see ourselves at our essence, and that changes our experience of the world.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to start with the beginning of that because I think the cornerstone of that is the last thing you said, seeing ourselves, the essence of who we are. And I can't imagine you came up with this book and it flowed from you without you having some personal experience of this type of core shift. Can you talk a little bit about your own life and how this came to be, how the book came to be?
Yes, absolutely. Actually, this book is like, you could kind of think of this as a sequel in a fashion. It's not really a sequel, but it follows another book that I had written called The Power of Wisdom, in that book, The Power of Wisdom, I explored in a whole bunch of different ways how our perspective shapes everything we do and we experience, whether we're good leaders, whether we're great parents, whether we're good in our relationships, whether we are successful in whatever aspect of our lives and however you define success, whether it's success in our spirituality or whatever, it all starts with how we see the world. And how I came to that realization was that I was in the corporate world, and I was running a $100 million company. I was the vice president and general manager of a $100 million company, and I was suddenly given this huge challenge, and I was trying to do the typical things that everybody else does. I was doing all the techniques and tricks that everybody tells us to do, all the books on how to manage, how to be a great leader. I was using all those things, the time management book, and I wasn't getting anywhere. And then it struck me that what I was doing was following the same perspectives that everybody else was following, and I was stuck in their half-truths. And I said to myself, I have to start looking at the whole situation, starting with myself. How do I see the people at work? How do I see the tasks at work? And then start training the people around me and start seeing things at their essence. And that one shift changed my whole experience in my work, because I was running this company that was losing money, and then 6 months later, the whole company started making a huge profit. And at that time, I said to myself, well, if this is so simple and yet it is so profound, then other people could benefit from it as well. And so I wrote the book, The Power of Wisdom. And then that led me to write the book, Yes, You Can Change the World, because I said, well, what if I showed this in the form of a story rather than a lecture, which, you know, most books are do this, do that, think about this, think about that. So what if I say it in the form of a story, that stories that people can relate to, stories that people experience in their everyday world? And so that's when how the book came about, Yes, You Can Change the World. It's a parable, actually. And actually, although it's not based upon one particular person, it is a summation of people I have actually met. These are all real-life stories that I have patched together with a few changes, of course, to protect their privacy. But it takes specific situations like somebody having a huge problem with an abusive parent, or somebody, an old mother who feels isolated from her children because her children are onto her own thing, and how she experiences the world. And going through those kinds of real-life stories, how their world changed simply by them changing their perspective.
Well, I also am aware, now that I've heard that part of your own story, that one of the characters in this book is really an extension of that businessman you were just talking about.
That is me. That is me.
Very, very clearly. And it's really interesting because the words you used just now were almost the words you wrote in the book.
And I
like that, because I think that when we write and teach and talk from a personal perspective, it holds more meaning to the people listening, and it rings truer to those that are listening. I know as a therapist, you know, there are a lot of therapists that don't believe in self-disclosure. And to me, there's a very clear time and place for self-disclosure in the therapeutic relationship, and my clients really seem to appreciate that. And I do that on the show here also very often. I think it's a very important thing to do, is to humanize the process.
Yeah. You know, actually, I think even more important than disclosing yourself to others is the process of disclosing yourself to yourself.
Yeah, well, that's where we started with this question, because it is the core. It is, you know, to me, the point of therapy is to help people take a look inside at them.
Yeah.
And even if they think what got them into therapy is problems they're having with their partner or whatever, it always gets back to, well, what's your contribution to this? What is it that you're afraid of? What are the defenses? What are the fears that you're holding on to? Where do they come from? And this is one of the points in your book also, is what do you think the fears of the other person are?
Yes.
And that to me is just a prime core question to ask ourselves at all times. But that is one of the main tenets in your book is...
Yeah.
Is shift your perspective. Ask yourself, what do you think is their fear? What's going on with them?
Yes, so often we come across people like the example, the story, the part of the story where this man is talking about his very abusive father, and he has a perspective shift when somebody in the story tells him, well, as miserable as he is making you, he's probably even more miserable himself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when he has the epiphany of, you know, the perspective is completely different now, because now he's looking at the fear his father is going through and the fear that's causing his father to be the way he has been with him throughout his life.
Well, I'm going to play devil's advocate here.
I'm sorry?
I'm going to play devil's advocate here for a minute, because most people, and I believe he touched on it in the book also, they may get that thought intellectually.
Yes.
But they're still so hurt and so angry that they're not willing to give up their position and soften towards that person, because the thought usually is, then the father has won and I've lost.
Yes.
How do you address that?
Well, see, this is not about winning and losing, and this is also about recognizing the power we have on how we shape our world. See, one of the things I've become so acutely aware of in working with people, as a therapist, you work with people, but as a leader in a company, you also work with people, and you do a lot of therapeutic things. And one of the things I've learned in working with people is how much power we have over the outcome that happens around us. And so when we're talking about an abusive parent or an abusive friend, and we are not willing to look at what they're experiencing, what we're doing is we're abdicating our power. That's what we're really doing. We don't realize
it. What do you mean? What do you mean?
We're giving up our power. We're letting the other person take over our power, and we go deeper and deeper into the anger and the fear that we've been experiencing rather than pulling ourselves out of it, because as we rise out of it, the other person rises out of it as well, and the relationship starts changing.
And when you're saying the relationship starts changing, what about the other person who is not conscious of what you're doing? I mean, most people will say, well, how's that going to affect the person who's been so abusive? You know, it's like, just because I'm changing and I'm shifting, you know, they're still going to be the same.
They're not going to be the same, because when you shift your perspective and you look at the pain that they're experiencing and you become willing to look at the potential that that person has hidden within them that has not surfaced yet, your whole thought process changes. The way you're thinking about that person changes. The way you're acting towards that person changes. Your body language changes. Everything changes. Your stress starts going down. And the other person at a subconscious level notices that change in you. And as a result of noticing or sensing at a subconscious level that change in you, they start slowing down. Instead of scowling at you, they scowl a little bit less. Instead of being bitter at you, they're a little bit less bitter. It may not be huge in the beginning, but slowly they start reflecting back to you how you have been looking at them. And that starts changing the relationship.
Yeah, and I agree with it entirely, actually. You know, the questions I'm asking are just to try and shake some things up here. But I also know that most people who are angry and bitter, who try and hold on to that kind of relating in their relationships, need a willing partner. And if you stop being that willing partner, then they get a little crazed at first, because all of a sudden there is not the engagement that they're used to and expecting. And then all of a sudden it's like, okay, what do I do with this now, you know? They just don't know where to go with it from there. So
it's like both of you were dancing a particular dance before, and now you realize that you're going to rise above that and you're going to dance a much softer, a much slower, a much more loving dance. And the other person, after a while, after being perturbed at first about why you're dancing a different dance, will start getting into step with you.
And they may also, and it's one thing that I know you mentioned in the book that I warn clients about all the time, is you may change your perception. You may change and soften yourself, but the other person initially is going to get really scared and try and hook you back into the old behaviors.
Yeah.
And sometimes they may, you know, you may go into agreement with them, but if you stay conscious and realize that's what they're doing, then you can step back, take a breath, and stay grounded in this new approach and this new sense of being.
Yes. And that's where I keep stressing how important it is to not forget the power we have within us. We have the power to change the world. We have the power to take the most difficult people and have them not be so difficult with us.
Now, one of the ways you help identify people in terms of, and help people identify the sense of power they really have, is the cornerstone of one of the points you make in here, and that is the intrinsic value that everyone on this planet has. Whether they know what it is or not, everyone has a value here. And again, that to me is a very important concept. But there are a lot of people walking around, a lot of people go into therapy because they feel so worthless. So talk about that intrinsic value and how people can wake up to that.
You know, actually, that particular point is the whole spine of the book, so to speak, because every part, every story that we encounter as we start reading the parable, every person we encounter, that one subject keeps coming back up, and that is learn to recognize the intrinsic worth of everybody who comes into your life, starting with yourself. And there's actually, in the first story, one of the young women, there's a young woman in the story, and she asks, she says, what if you can't see it? And the answer she gets is, even if you don't see it, Even if you don't know what it is, you must. It's a way of looking. It's a way of living. It's a way of living your life. It's a way of breathing. You just recognize that everybody has the worth. And the more you recognize it, the more you are able to see it. So it is the opposite of what most people say. You know, most people say, I'll see it when I believe it. But the reality is, when you believe it, you will see it.
And it really is about faith, that
yes.
to know that it is there, it is truth. And when most people, I know that if my listeners are really tuning into what we're talking about here, there's some part of them inside going, yeah, I get that. I believe that. I've known that. Even if they've never thought about it consciously before, there's a knowingness that I think we all have
yes.
about these thoughts.
And you remember, Stuart, in the beginning of the story, there's a homeless person who's walking in front of the young woman, and she looks at the old man and she says, how can you see the worth in this homeless person who's walking by? And she's completely perturbed. And I won't spoil the story for the people mm-hmm. who want to read the book, but in the end of the story, something happens with that homeless person. And the whole thing changes. The homeless person is a very intrinsic part of the story. Remember
right.
that?
Yes,
you know,
I do.
So, you know, so... And we won't spoil that for the readers, but...
No,
we
won't.
Every person who walks into your life, even a complete stranger, has an intrinsic worth, and we have to start moving through life, living, breathing, seeing that everybody has an intrinsic worth. Just because we can't see it doesn't mean it's not there, because it is there.
And the sense of personal power also means that who we are and how we act has an effect on everyone we come in contact with
yes.
and on people we don't even physically come in contact with. You know, we talk about, you know, we all have an effect on the world, and if you're stuck in a state of depression, you're affecting the world. If you
yes.
decide to feel joy, you're affecting the world.
Yeah.
And you talk about it in terms of a ripple effect. Talk
yes.
about that impact for a minute.
Can I back up a little bit, if you don't mind?
Of course,
you know,
yeah.
And talk a little bit about what the parable is. The parable itself is. We've talked about bits and pieces about it, but I thought your listeners might want to know.
Mm-hmm.
It's the story of a young man who, you know, has moved on with his life, is very successful, has all the things that we all, you know, have nowadays. You know, in our society, so many of us have so many things. We have all the acquisitions. We have more toys, more gadgets than anybody in our history of this planet. And the story is of a young man just like that who has accumulated it all and has not been spending a lot of time with his father. And then his father dies. And he comes to the small town where his father has died, and he's expecting only a handful of people to be at his father's funeral. Instead, there are hundreds, and there's a huge storm, and there are people who have been braving the storm. They're standing in line even though the rain is coming down on them. And he looks at the license plates of all the cars, and they're from all over the country. And he asks himself, what did my father do to all these people that they're here to pay their last respects to him?
Mm-hmm.
And so he's now curious about, what did my father do, and why did I... What if I died tomorrow? How many people are going to come to my funeral? And then he starts thinking to himself, maybe my father's secret has gone with him, and then he realizes that he could get out of his car and start asking the people who are in line and ask them what my father did for you. And as he goes up to people and he starts asking them, what did my father do for you? They all look at him like they don't understand, because his father didn't do anything for them at all. It was
mm-hmm.
just simply who his father was. And then he starts meeting people. For example, he meets an old lady who hasn't even met his father. Her son has met his father, but she herself has never met his father, but her life has changed. And then she comes across this executive who talks about people at his place of work whose lives have changed, and these people don't even know that his father exists. And so the story illustrates how, by who we are, we can affect people we don't even know. Because once we look at the world at its essence, once we are willing to shift our perspective, what happens is that we uplift the people around us. And some of them will be uplifted enough that they will go and uplift the people around them.
Mm-hmm.
And then some of them will be uplifted enough that they'll go and uplift the people around them. And so just a simple way, a ripple gets started, and a ripple keeps building, and the ripples keep intersecting, and we can change the whole world. That's
right.
How powerful we are.
And the flip side of that, and the reason I'm bringing it back to that, is that I think it's important that listeners really get that if the choice they're making is to maintain depression and anger and everything else, that same ripple effect is happening
exactly. All
over the world in
exactly. Their
own relationships, in their own family, when they go to work. People hate the fact that they're coming into work the next day because they're so dark and negative. And there is so much of that on the planet already in terms of people fighting and judging and
yeah. And
everything else, that it is so important. You know, you say, well, what can I do to change the world? Well, just like what Margaret Mead said, it starts with a single person
yes. To
decide to smile
yes. Instead
of frown.
Right. You know,
as
a very important point,
mm-hmm. Very
important point that a young man keeps discovering over and over again throughout the story is that in every moment, in every interaction with another person, you're either making the world slightly better or you're making it slightly worse. There is
mm-hmm. No
middle ground. In every moment, you're making it better or you're making it worse. There is no middle ground. There's no that the world is just going to remain the same irrespective of how you behave. You create, mm-hmm. You're starting that ripple with each and every person.
Right. I have an assignment that I give to clients that sometimes, and I also have done it myself, or I wouldn't give it as an assignment, and that is to get people out of their patterns. I suggest to them that they go through the next 24 hours with a smile on their face to everyone that they see, to walk down the street smiling and nodding to people, saying hello, whatever, even if they're just walking on, whether it's a homeless person, whether it's the busboy, whether it is the taxi driver, whatever, just smile and walk on. And you don't have to engage any more, any less than that. But there's you will never know the impact that smile has had on that person's day,
mm-hmm.
or how it may have shifted something that may have been very difficult for them in that moment, to have been seen where they may have been feeling invisible, to come out of their own pain for a little bit because of a smile. And the ripple effect that you're talking about from something as simple as that, a simple smile
yeah. And
a nod towards
yeah. Somebody.
You
know, I give a similar assignment to people. You know, I do workshops as well, and I give a very similar assignment. I don't even ask them to smile. I just tell them, just think in your mind as you're looking at a person that there is some intrinsic value here, and you're going to figure out what that is with every person. Even if it's a person you see for a second as you're walking by them, that you're going to figure that out. And at some point, it's going to become evident. So treat them with that respect and that dignity.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is the smile comes as a natural outcome of that to them, because they can't help but smile at something that they appreciate. And
right.
one of the most wonderful things that I've found people coming back with when they come back from one of those exercises, because it's done during like in the afternoon, when you take the break for the afternoon, go do this, or walk around the workshop area, look into the hotel, go onto the street. They come back and they say, I made friends with people I didn't even know.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole experience has changed because people are reflecting back to them, and they started that whole ripple effect, and they start getting a sense of the power that they have.
I agree with that totally. I want to remind my listeners that if you want to call in and ask Aman Matwan or myself a question about how you can change the world, or how these things have impacted you, or have questions about how you can apply it, the number in the Phoenix area is 480-949-1310. That's 480-949-1310.
I would encourage your listeners to call with a personal challenge, and let's talk about how a simple change in your perspective will make a difference to
mm-hmm. Whatever
challenge you have and whatever relationship you have. I think that
okay. Would
be a good thing to do and an informative thing to do.
Well, until that happens, I want to talk about children, because
yes. You
mentioned this in the book, and it's something that I've always believed, and feel that it's paramount. I talk about the impact that, you know, parents and teachers and adults have on children and how we're molding them for better or worse based on us not dealing with our own issues and passing it down. And you applied this to adults, but you also applied it to children in the book. In other words, find out who they are instead of trying to make them what you want.
Yes. There's so much going on of parents who are so focused on what they want to do with their children that makes them look good rather than saying, who is my child really? And, you know, one of the things that I talk about in the book through the story, the young man, as he goes through the story, starts discovering that nothing, no characteristic, no trait in itself is inherently bad. We as a society tend to put labels on everything, but every trait, every characteristic has a strength hidden within it. And as a parent, as a leader, as a friend, we should be looking for that strength that's hidden within what society might tell us is a bad thing to have. Because there's nothing in, for example, somebody who's persnickety about details might be obnoxious and irritating to us, but at the same time, that's the very same person you would want to be doing the maintenance on your plane before your plane takes off, 30,000 feet
definitely
into the air, right? So
yes,
every characteristic has an intrinsic strength in it, and that's a very important shift in our perspective, because that's going to change our relationship with ourselves. So when people start telling us things about us that don't sound good, you know the strength that's hidden within that. And then when you look at other people and you look at your children, you realize that, for example, I talk about in the story, and this is actually a real incident that happened right here in California, which is where I'm calling from. I was in a workshop, and we were talking about looking for the strength hidden within. And this parent in the audience said, you know, his teacher had been complaining to him how talkative his son was, that he was talking all the time, his classmates were getting irritated, and the father had been disciplining his son, teaching him how to learn how to listen and how to be more restrained in what he said and how to be more selective in what he said. And I said, no, the fact that he loves to talk means he's probably should be a minister who stands up and talks in front of people, or he should learn to be a politician. So don't restrain that. Send him to school to learn how to do good public speaking. Build that thing. Don't call it a weakness. Make that strength even a bigger strength. Hello?
Excellent. Yeah.
Are
you there?
Yes, I'm here. Yes. I heard a tone, and I was wondering what that was. Sorry.
Okay. No.
Well, speaking of tones, we got a couple callers on the line, Stuart.
Okay.
We got
good.
Bobby from Phoenix calling in on line one.
Hello,
okay, Bobby. Welcome to Tell the Truth Faster.
Hello, gentlemen. And I've listened to your program before, sir. I just had to call today because what you're speaking about is what I have chosen to learn. And it's just been miraculous the way your life can be. A perfect example is to look at an ex-husband, and I could have chosen to call him an alcoholic. Because of that, I went to Al-Anon, and I found out I could be a better alcoholic. So, see, he was my savior in a way because I chose to give up the alcohol and really look at myself and not blame or judge him. I chose him, you know, initially for the marriage. So, you know, and I was part of the situation.
Mm-hmm.
And
Aman, you want to go ahead.
So,
Bobby.
I didn't quite follow you, Bobby. You're saying that you had an alcoholism problem as well?
No. I could have. My father was the best alcoholic in the state of Texas, so I had all the makeup. And only by going to 12-step meetings and doing lots of psychological research, meaning group therapy, et cetera, to find out about me, you know,
yes.
I was my problem.
Yes,
no
you
one
were
else
your problem,
was.
And you chose him, and you brought him in, and you were probably struggling with some other addiction that you weren't aware of at the time.
Yes.
You know, addiction is not just alcohol or substance. There's lots of different types of addiction. There's workaholism. There's obsession with things. There's, you know, we all have that, and we tend to bring people into our lives that build us up in those aspects because we are we think of ourselves as being incomplete.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Correct. So I just wanted to say your interview is just phenomenal today. I'm just like sailing on clouds going, yeehaw. I am so grateful.
That's sweet of you, Bobby, and I really appreciate you calling in, and I'm glad to know that you're a regular listener. I appreciate that tremendously.
Yes, sir.
Thank you,
okay,
Bobby.
Okay, thanks for calling.
Bye-bye.
Wade, who's our next caller?
All right, looks like we got Jeff from Phoenix again.
Jeff?
Okay, Jeff, you're on Tell the Truth Faster. Thanks for calling in. What's your comment?
Hello. I'm really relating to this show today. I've heard you once before. I like this show better than the last one.
Okay.
But, basically what you guys are talking about me took me 37 years and three marriages to learn. living in the solution and not in the problem. You know, I was hopelessly addicted to crack cocaine for like 3 years, living in the back of my car, you know, going from a respectable business person to way down, and daughter would never talk to me for like 6 months, and you know, until I got my life together, and wound up after that getting the relationship together with my daughter. She lived with me for a couple years. We were foster parents, had over 35 kids, and adopted three from foster care. So life can take a full 360, 180, whatever you want to call it.
You know, I think your experience is so important that people really hear, because I think one of the biggest problems people face sometimes is when they're down, they think there's no way or no opportunity or no chance that they're ever going to turn it around.
Right.
And people need to hear stories like yours. They need to know that, you know, they had it, they lost it, and they were able to take a different path and feel good about themselves again and do something like Amand talks about in his book, to find that intrinsic value that you possess.
Right. And another, parable or whatever, you know, I have horrible back pain. I have two herniated discs, sciatic nerve trouble, blah, blah, blah. But if you put yourself in the perspective of another person, say my wife at 33, before I even met her, she had a brainstem stroke.
Oh.
Wow.
So my little backache isn't a whole heck of a lot. Like I tell the story, you know, when I met Marty, I just thought she had a slight drinking problem, maybe liked wine a little bit, you know, because she'd stagger a little and slur her words.
You're an inspiration.
Thank you. And I've been in sales for a number of years, and,
I
don't have good teeth. Just because somebody doesn't smile doesn't mean they're not happy.
Yes.
Uh-huh. So
may I throw out a challenge to you, Jeff?
What was that? I'm sorry?
May I throw out a challenge to you?
Yes, go ahead.
You are an inspiration. Now you should see how you can take that inspiration and make a sweeping change in the lives of everybody around you.
To
inspire them to not wait for 36 years to learn what you learn, but learn it in less time than that, because indeed it's possible.
Yeah, it is. My motto used to be changing the world one child at a time.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And then we got got in over our heads.
Changing the world is a one person to person proposition, one person at a time.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
I'll tell you, if somebody wants to write a book on our family, you got a bestseller. I swear.
Well, maybe you're what you're destined to do is start writing that book yourself.
I've tried to get my wife to write it, but I'm good at relating the story. So you have my phone number. So
okay,
give us a call.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff.
I really appreciate you listening.
Your story into it.
Good deal. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thanks for calling. Do we have another caller, Wade?
Oh, Stuart, the fun doesn't stop there. We got Bob coming in from Glendale.
Well, thanks, Bob. Thanks for calling in to Tell the Truth Faster.
You're welcome.
It's
a pleasure to speak with you.
Hello, Bob.
Hello. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Yes, we can.
Okay. Unfortunately, I disagree with much of what you say. I'm a clinical psychologist and also a high school teacher. And your comment about encouraging students to be talkative and so forth is becoming quite a problem in today's world. We have students now, for example, in the classrooms whose parents have who embrace that philosophy, and we now have students in the class that literally refuse to be taught. and well, are I'm disruptive not, in the entire environment.
Oh, no, I'm not saying that they should be talking all the time, but they should be trained to channel that strength rather than completely suppress that strength. Mm-hmm. See, one of the things that I've learned with people is that once they know that something is neither bad nor good, then they can go to the next level to see under what situations it works for them and under what mm-hmm. situations it doesn't work for them. So in the case of this parent, teach them how to channel that strength of learning how to talk and learning how to be eloquent and learning how to be inspiring to other people, and yet at the same time learn when it actually hurts his relationships.
Right, I would agree with that. Those that talent should be channeled, and it should be, but it also should be regulated and controlled and in
the right environment,
so that it can
absolutely.
Be perfected.
So we're saying the same thing.
Yeah.
Yes,
but some of the things that you say, you know, it's kind of your attitude in some respects is very similar to the Army, be all that you can be, think positive things happen. And
I'm not saying be all
well,
you can.
But you kind of are. You're changing terms. You're talking about things like, you know, you think positive things happen. If you change your attitude, it changes the world. It changes you. And those things aren't always true. One of the problems that we have today is that people wind up living in an artificial world that they create where they attempt to be positive in the entire world in every aspect of their daily lives when some of those areas are not positive. People even change the terms that they use. Excuse me. For example, rather than saying something is a problem, they say it's a challenge. And what happens is when people live in this artificially made or created environment, they ultimately become disappointed. And then that leads, of course, to tremendous depression and makes me a lot of money. You know,
you might be surprised to hear that I completely agree with you.
One of my favorite clients, I love lawyers because they have a lot of money to pay and they never get better. You know, because they live in a very negative adversarial world.
Yeah.
And they're realists. Everything is gray. There is no black and white. And so these people, and they're representative of many people, they have just tremendous conflicts because there is no true right and wrong. There's no truth. Everything is a matter of perspective.
Well,
so am I disagreeing with you?
No, actually, you know, we're saying the same thing. We didn't get to that part of the discussion yet. But, you know, the most important thing I teach people to say is along the lines of the same thing that you're saying, that is, you know, you take every characteristic has its downside, and every characteristic has its positive side. If you're aware of that, you can make it work for you. For example, society tells us being charismatic is a very powerful thing, and I beg to disagree. A charismatic leader could bring a lot of trouble to an organization because most of the employees will just shut their brains off.
Right.
If a charismatic leader is not aware that his strength can become a weakness, then that charismatic leader is just going to fail. He's going to struggle to survive.
Well, that's a problem in the world today. Many of our strengths become weaknesses. Many people are victims of their own success.
Yes, and so that's the reason why it's so important for the people, for each person to become aware of what are the strengths of every characteristic and what are the weaknesses of every characteristic, and then bring out that strength so that it works for them, so that they are aware of the outcome they are creating. And in so doing, they can build their world and start changing the world.
It's interesting to note that we live in the most plentiful society on the face of the earth. We have more than anyone else in the world, and yet we're the most dissatisfied of all the peoples.
Yes. Did you read the latest issue of Time magazine? They quoted an article that just appeared in called The Social Isolation in America.
Mm-hmm.
And they said that between 1984 and 2004, there's been a 30% drop in how close we feel to the people around us. In other words, it used to be back in the 70s and 80s, most of us were close to X number of people. And today we're close to 30% fewer than we used to be.
Oh, absolutely. There's a number of tremendous books that have been written on the subject. In addition to our civilization becoming dumber, less educated, we have fewer human contacts.
We have fewer human contacts, and we have fewer contacts with people that we can talk about our most deepest things.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Most of our conversations are very superficial.
I actually want to jump in here because I'm really grateful that I have a guest and a caller.
Yes.
Are you there?
Yes, I'm
okay.
Here.
Because I actually lost my connection there a little bit ago.
Oh, did you?
I'm so grateful the two of you were able to carry on the way you were, because once I came, somebody's hitting their phone and getting some numbers there. Bob, I really want to thank you for calling in. I think we may have another call in. We only have a few minutes left. So,
well, you're welcome. Thank you for taking my call.
Is this the first time you've listened to the show?
Yes, matter of fact, it is.
Thank you,
well,
Bob.
Hopefully you'll be listening again. Thanks, Bob.
I'll do it. Thank you very much.
Wade, do we have another caller?
No, actually, that was the last one, Stuart.
Okay. Well, that leaves us enough time. First of all, I want to thank the callers tonight. It's been a while since I've had a lineup of calls, and that says something about the topic and my guest and hopefully about the show. So, Aman, it would be great if you could talk about your website, and I know that you have an appearance in Mesa, Arizona, the University of Mesa coming up. So let's make sure we get some information in about that before the end of the show.
It's the Unity of Mesa. There's a Unity Church in Mesa.
Okay, Unity. Mm-hmm.
And it's called the Unity of Mesa. It's on Sunday, July 16th from 12:30 to 3 p.m., and it's quite inexpensive. It's only $25 at the gate. And we'll be talking about, actually, the Unity of Mesa is going to be going through a 5-week study program, studying the book, Yes, You Can Change the World, and I'm going to be doing a workshop on the inauguration day, and then they're going to continue it. So you can attend just the workshop on that day with me, or if you want to, you can keep coming back to the church and be part of the process. But I'd love to have your listeners come to that workshop, so we can discuss more about this and see, because we'll go through some experiential exercises on how we can see things at their essence and at their truth. In order to find out information about Unity of Mesa, just go to the website unityofmesa.org, and you'll have all the information over there. What I want to talk about for a few minutes, if you don't mind, Stuart, is about the website we put together.
No, I want you to, of course.
Yes. The website, Stuart, as you know because you've seen it, one of the things that I was concerned about is that there's so many books out there, but you know the big thing that always is missing in every book is the opportunity to practice what you learned. And one of the most important things I've learned about people is that you cannot learn something until you've actually acted it. You have to act it so that it starts becoming you. You have to actually start the process so that it becomes you. And so we put a website together, which is the name of the book, YesYouCanChangeTheWorld.com. And actually, if you don't remember all those words and, might make a mistake or something, just go to Stuart's website on the homepage. You'll see a banner there, and you just click on it, and it'll take you directly to the website. And what we do on this website is we send uplifting acknowledgments to people that we know. We look at their intrinsic worth, we recognize their intrinsic worth, and then we let them know that we see their intrinsic worth. And then we talk about, from what we have learned from the book, we start acting and start incorporating that into our lives. The whole website is a real fun thing to do, because once you send a message out, what happens is that the person who receives the message could be sending messages to other people, and so it creates that whole ripple effect. Now, in real life, we never get to see the ripples we create. We never get to see how far our ripples have gone. But on this website, you can come back after you sent a message. You can come back and see how far your ripples have gone. And, just do the math. If each of us sent a message out to 9 people, and the next group of people sent out a message to 9 people each, and the next group of people sent a message out to 9 people each, and by the time we're 10 tiers deep, we will have reached 3.4 billion people. That's over half the people on the planet. That's how powerful we are. And here's a way, with technology nowadays, these things are possible. It's to see how we impact people we don't even know. So I encourage your listeners to come to the website. Just go to Stuart's website, tellthetruthfaster.com, and right on the homepage, you'll see a banner which says, Yes, You Can Change the World. Just click on it. It'll take you to my website. And by the way, when you get to the website, if you want to read an excerpt from the book, a free excerpt from the book, Yes, You Can Change the World, you can read that over there as well. And if you want to order a book from there, you can order it as well.
The other thing I want to remind people that if you've listened to the show tonight and you feel like you want someone you know to hear what we have to say, within about a week, the show will be up on the archives, and it will be there forever so that you can hear Aman talk about his book, but also a lot of the wisdom that he's been sharing with us today, all the wisdom he's been sharing with us tonight, will be on the website in the archives forever. So I really want to remind you, and it was so nice of you as my guest to plug my website, because usually that's the host's role to plug yours. That was thoughtful.
Well,
so
tell the
truth.
See, I believe in win-win-win-win-win.
I agree totally. Totally. That's the only way to go. So tellthetruthfaster.com. You can hear all the archives of every show I've done for the last 4 years. You can get the link to yesyoucanchangetheworld.com. You can get the information about the workshop that Aman Matwan is going to be doing at Unity of Mesa on Sunday, July 16th from 12:30 to 3 p.m. And again, I ask you, if you've been listening to the show, please email me. Let me know what you think. If tonight was the first time you listened, go to the website and email me. Aman, I really want to thank you so much, not just for being on the show, but for this book. And
thank
I really
you.
Encourage people to go out and get this book and read it. It's such easy reading and will move you tremendously. Thanks for being on the show tonight, Aman.
Thank you, Stuart. It's been a wonderful pleasure.
And I want to thank all of my listeners for being here. This is Stuart Altshuler on KXAM 1310 AM in Phoenix with Tell the Truth Faster. We'll see you next week. And please listen and have a great weekend.